This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We consider this a day to pause, to reflect, celebrate journalists and the hard work that they do every day, keeping the public informed, but also to remember the difficulties that they go through.
That's Mutoki Mumo, Sub-Saharan Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists, on the significance of World Press Freedom Day today. Details coming up. Also, a seven-day ceasefire in Sudan raises the question, what happens now? And in Rwanda, flooding and landslides from heavy rains have killed at least 109 people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The announcement of a seven-day ceasefire in Sudan's troubled capital is being welcomed in capitals around the world, including Washington. But what happens now? Washington says officials continue to engage with Khartoum at the highest levels, as the African Union does the same. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
After more than 2 weeks of fighting that has killed hundreds and caught up millions of ordinary people in the middle, a long-awaited break. The leaders of both of Sudan's armed factions on Tuesday announced a one-week ceasefire to allow for talks. The State Department says they have been seeking a ceasefire for weeks. Deputy spokesperson Vedant Patel.
Every time that this ceasefire is extended, it allows us to continue to work hand in hand through the auspices of the Quad, through the auspices of the AU, IGAD, and the UN to get us to a durable cessation of hostilities that will hopefully take us back to what we believe is the will of the Sudanese people, and that is a transitional government.
President Joe Biden had previously called the violence unconscionable and called for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire and unhindered humanitarian access. The United States evacuated its personnel last month and temporarily suspended embassy operations. On Tuesday, the White House said it remains engaged. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We remain in close contact with the Sudanese military and civilian leaders to see what we can to help them identify a path to reach a sustainable secession of hostilities that include humanitarian arrangements, and we are engaged at the highest levels regularly.
And in Addis Ababa, the African Union said Tuesday that they too are hard at work on the problem. Decades of U.S. sanctions and testy relations between Washington and Khartoum has led U.S. officials to say that regional partners need to be involved in brokering a solution. AU Commission Chairperson Mohamed Al-Hassan Labat.
We have agreed on the necessity to intensify collectively and individually all our effort to reach as soon as possible a complete, unconditional, efficient, inclusive ceasefire all over Sudan.
United Nations agencies say the fighting has displaced more than 334,000 people in the country and sent tens of thousands more fleeing to neighboring countries. And aid agencies say they expect a massive exodus of more than 800,000 refugees. As night falls in Khartoum, many are wondering, is this just a break or a breakthrough? The next few days will tell. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has urged the international community to engage with the parties involved in the conflict in Sudan to stop the fighting. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The UN chief discussed the latest developments in Sudan with reporters in Nairobi late Wednesday.
The fighting needs to stop, and to stop now. Before more people die and this conflict explodes into an all-out war that could affect the region for years to come. All parties must put the interests of the Sudanese people first, and that means peace, a return to civilian rule, allowing for the development of the country.
The UN chief spoke as the war across Sudan, the appalling scenes of violence and bloodshed between the army and a paramilitary force, continued unabated, particularly in the capital, Khartoum. In the light of the rapidly deteriorating humanitarian crisis in Sudan, Guterres said the Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths is now in Sudan to help ensure the continued flow of humanitarian assistance. Guterres is also expected to attend a state dinner late Wednesday, hosted by Kenyan President William Ruto.
The Sudanese are facing a humanitarian catastrophe. Hospitals destroyed, humanitarian warehouses looted, millions facing food insecurity. And I echo President William Ruto's strong calls for the parties to de-escalate tensions, return to the negotiating table, and agree on a lasting ceasefire.
Earlier in the day, the UN chief met with UN staff at the UN office in Nairobi. On Thursday and Friday, the Secretary General will chair this year's first session of the UN System Chief Executives Board for Coordination. The board meets twice a year and brings together the leaders of the UN agencies, funds and programs, and is the highest level coordination forum of the UN system.
And this is a vital time as we look at the unfolding crisis in the region, especially in Sudan, a situation that is deeply concerning as it grows worse by the day. Khartoum is in turmoil. Darfur is burning once again. More than 100,000 people have fled, and 800,000 people might flee the country in the coming days and weeks.
Meanwhile, the Norwegian Refugee Council has strongly condemned the violence, which has resulted in the loss of at least 190 lives, including one of their community volunteers. In a statement issued Wednesday, the council said that dozens of settlements have been burned and destroyed, and thousands of people have been displaced. The aid worker was killed on Sunday in an informal settlement in Gineina in the region of West Darfur, where he was working as part of a team involved in a community outreach program. The work has since been suspended due to the escalating security situation. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
A top United Nations official is calling on Sudan's rival military leaders to publicly commit themselves to the safe delivery of humanitarian assistance to millions of people struggling to survive amid escalating fighting. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
At the end of a three-day troubleshooting visit to the region, UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths said the Sudanese people face a humanitarian catastrophe. Speaking by video link from Port Sudan, he said it is essential that the leaders of the two warring factions publicly back the efforts of humanitarian agencies to provide relief to those in need.
I've already started working on here today is to be sure that we have the commitments publicly and clearly given by the two militaries to protect humanitarian assistance, to deliver on the obligations to allow supplies of people to move, and that we should do that even when there is no formal national ceasefire.
Griffiths said he and the UN Special Representative for Sudan, Volker Perthes, today spoke with Sudan Armed Forces leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the commander of the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. In their talks, he said, they stressed the need for humanitarian aid to reach the people. But for that to happen, he said, strong guarantees on the safety of aid workers and supplies need to be backed up with agreements from the top.
Because it seems to me getting those commitments is a condition precedent for large-scale humanitarian action. And I say large-scale because humanitarian action is continuing day by day by day, and it's been a mistake to suggest that it stopped, completely. It didn't, of course, continue.
Since fighting between the two factions began more than 3 weeks ago, hundreds of thousands of Sudanese have been forced to flee their homes. Even more are trapped in their homes, unable to get supplies. Some aid workers have been killed. And Griffiths said a World Food Program aid convoy has been looted. He said medicines, food, clean water, fuel, and other critical commodities are desperately needed. He said some supplies have entered the country, but not enough. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In 1993, the UN General Assembly proclaimed May 3rd as World Press Freedom Day. Mutoki Mumo is the Sub-Saharan Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. In the conversation we had, Mutoki starts out by describing the significance of the day to her.
The significance of World Press Freedom Day. We consider this a day to pause, to reflect, to celebrate journalists and the hard work that they do every day, keeping the public informed, but also to remember the difficulties that they go through and to reflect again as individual journalists, as organizations, as a community of people who are interested in press freedom, to reflect on what we can do to make sure that journalists do not have to go through those difficulties as they do their jobs. So that's the significance of World Press Freedom Day for me. I also have to acknowledge that, you know, as an African, as a person with an African background, so it is a very significant day for me on multiple levels as a person whose background is in African journalism, African media, as a person who wants to celebrate the job such journalists do, but also realizes and sees every day the difficulties that they do to report the news.
So over the years, Mutoki, as you know, we have seen the proliferation of independent media, the rise of digital technologies, and the free flow of information online, especially in Africa. But the sad fact is that currently, across the globe, and in particular in Africa, media freedom, safety for journalists, freedom of expression are under attack from Gambia to Cameroon, from Egypt to Eritrea to Ethiopia. Can you talk a little about that?
When we look at the difficulties, again, the challenges that journalists are going through, we tend to look at a few indicators which can give us an idea of what the bigger picture is. And one of those indicators is the imprisonment of journalists, how many journalists are behind bars at any given moment. Now, we as CPJ usually collect this data on an annual basis. And each December, we have a report that comes out that says how many journalists are imprisoned on the date of December 1. And the reason I say this or I speak about this in detail is because last year, just a few months ago, 5 months ago, we at CPJ published a report where we found that we had a record number of journalists behind bars. And that is incredibly chilling. It's incredibly worrying because when you think about it, imprisonment is at the extreme of the kind of challenges that a journalist can face. So to see that many journalists, many reporters or editors are suffering that extreme type of oppression is very difficult. Now, when you look at our region, and that's the Sub-Saharan Africa region, there are a couple of countries that unfortunately stand out in terms of imprisonment of journalists. We can talk about Eritrea, where a lot of journalists have been imprisoned since 2001. Cameroon, which after Eritrea had some of the journalists who've been detained for the longest time in the region, you know, since 2016, 2017. And Rwanda, perhaps, where YouTubers are facing repression, a crackdown on dissenting speech. And then you have other countries where also we see periodic crackdowns on journalists, depending on what's happening, particularly in the broader political sphere. And Ethiopia fits into this, where during the civil war, it was very difficult for journalists, and we saw a series of arrests, a pattern of arrests, which unfortunately continues even beyond the signing of the peace agreement. But imprisonment is not the only thing that journalists face. We can talk about other trends that are worrying. And one of them, as you suggested at the beginning of this, is a pattern where African countries are really becoming aggressive against journalism online, where we're seeing parliaments, coming up with these restrictive, regressive laws to try and regulate what people can say, what they can write on social media platforms, on blogs, on news sites. And really, this is a symptom of the fact that the online space is one of the last remaining spaces where speech is really democratized, where you have a very broad swath of people who can speak, a very broad swath of journalists. They don't have to have frequency spectrum or a printing press in order to report the news.
That was Mutoki Mumo, Sub-Saharan Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists, speaking with me by phone from Nairobi, Kenya. As we mark World Press Freedom Day, the chairman of the Sudanese Journalist Syndicate says the ongoing conflict there has exacerbated existing restrictions on media. Abdel Monim Abu Idris says after longtime military ruler Omar al-Bashir was toppled in a popular uprising in 2019, press freedom improved significantly, then quickly deteriorated again following the 2021 military coup. He tells VOA's Nabil Biagio that during the current fighting between Sudan's army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, journalists have been physically attacked, threatened, intimidated, and otherwise unable to get out the truth about the conflict to the Sudanese people amid a campaign of disinformation and hate speech.
This fighting put the journalists and the media institute in a very critical situation. We have more than 50 journalists have been stuck in the fighting area for more than 5 days. Many media have been hit by explosions. This put life of the journalists in Sudan under risk. We call many times for the both parties of the fighting to secure the protection of the journalists during their coverage. But no one care about that. This is something put the life of most of journalists who are working for a local media or international media or a regional media under risk. Plus that, there is a huge raining of fake news and hate speech, which put the journalists under pressure to fabricate what is the realistic and what is the fake news and to avoid the hate speech. This is all things make the environment where Sudan's journalists working a very difficult situation.
Have there been any attacks on journalists or incidents of deaths or injuries during the current fighting?
We have our colleague, a photographer, Faiz Abubakr. He was injured by a bullet. And we have our journalist, Muhammad Al-Fatih. His house has been hit by explosions. And our colleague, Al-Jamil Al-Fadil, his wife is driving with his family. He was under shooting for a minute before he was able to leave the area with his family. We have some journalists receive a call from some people threaten them, if you continue doing this, we can kill you. Unknown people, we don't know them. Because of the war situation, even they cannot file a case in the police or to go to court so as to protect themselves.
Times of conflict and crisis, these are critical times for the work journalists do, getting the truth out to the people. But today, if you turn on the TV in Sudan or the radio, you either tune in to a side that's supporting the army or someone who's supporting the RSF. Everyone is just fueling the current fighting. How has the restriction of the freedom of press affected this conflict?
The journalists, sometimes because they want to save their life, it is difficult for them to give the truth, because if they give the truth, they can be under attack from one of the parts of the fighting. And we have the case of our colleagues who are working for the national radio and national TV. They have been stuck for a week inside the national radio and the national TV. And now the national radio, for more than 2 weeks, it's not broadcasting. And also national TV is broadcasting on and off. Also, the journalists are not free to move because the fighting is everywhere. and they cannot reach the place where they can collect the information.
Wednesday is World Press Freedom Day, and it happens that Sudan is in the middle of a brutal and bloody conflict. What are your reflections on this special day for journalists at this critical time Sudan is in?
Now we are, as a journalist syndicate, we are preparing a statement calling for the safety of Sudanese journalists under this war, and saying one of the main things have been affected by this war is the truth. And we are working on to establish a center that secures the protection of the Sudanese journalists.
Even before this conflict, how would you describe the general state of press freedom in Sudan before this conflict that began on April the 15th?
We have witnessed many, many situations. After toppling of Bashir's dictator regime, we have a widely of freedom of expression. After the coup in October 2021, freedom of expression have been affected. We have been witnessing some radio have been shut down, no flow of the information. The journalists are not free to move to any part of the country, which something witnesses during Bashir's dictator regime came back. And now we are witnessing the effect of the freedom of expression during the war and the fighting.
That's Abdel Moniem Abu Idris, the chairman of Sudanese Journalists Syndicate, speaking with VOA's Nabil Biagio from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Rwanda's state-run broadcast says heavy rains triggered flooding and landslides in the western and northern parts of the country, killing at least 109 people. Reuters reports that authorities are searching for survivors trapped in their homes. Muddy water flowed swiftly down the inundated roads and destroyed houses in a video clip posted by the Rwanda Broadcasting Agency. François Habitegeko, governor of Rwanda's western province, told Reuters that the death toll stood at 95 in the province. The state broadcaster said at least 14 deaths occurred in the northern province. In neighboring Uganda, near the border with Rwanda, six people, including five from the same family, died overnight in the southwestern Kisoro district after heavy rains pounded the mountainous region, according to the Ugandan Red Cross. Kenyan authorities say autopsies on dozens of bodies found in mass graves linked to the Kenyan cult show that some victims were strangled, beaten, or suffocated. Reuters says the discovery of the mass graves last month near the coastal town of Malindi has shocked Kenyans, with children accounting for more than half of the 109 victims who self-styled pastor Paul Intenge Mackenzie allegedly convinced to starve themselves to death to meet Jesus. Experts carried out 40 autopsies Monday and Tuesday. Chief Government Pathologist Johnson Odur said starvation appeared to be the main cause of death, but some victims appear to have been killed. Mackenzie is due in court in Kenya's second-largest city of Mombasa on Friday in what has been dubbed the Shakola Forest Massacre. He and 17 other suspects will face terrorism charges, with Mackenzie also accused of murder, kidnapping, cruelty towards children, and other crimes in court documents, according to the AFP. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.